Hello and welcome to Father Figures, the show about parenting with an emphasis on fatherhood, uncommon fathers, fathers of all stripes. I'm your host, Stephen Amaya, and here is where we explore the griefs and joys, the risks and rewards of being a dad. A warning, this episode contains mention of suicide and sexual abuse, so if you are inclined toward triggers in these areas, you may want to avoid it. This is the second interview with Jeff. I found the last episode was so full of things that happened that there was no way we could contain in one episode the important emotional reactions and decisions that followed. So for this second episode, I asked him to put together a timeline to give me a sense of a narrative of his life. What he produced was a list of 21 events, 21 transitions with descriptions averaging 3 or 4 words, brief phrases, lots of moves. He was peripatetic, changing addresses and changing hopes. While I can't report on all the moves, what I found is a life of slings and arrows, coupled with the realization that sometimes one must take one's life in one's arms and cherish the rarity and the beauty of what that is, all by oneself. Now, I think I heard correctly in the last episode, you said you were raised by a single mom,
mm-hmm.
And then your grandfather was also involved?
Yeah, my grandma and grandpa were also there.
Okay, they lived there too.
For the most part, it felt like they lived there, but they lived close by.
Okay. When your dad molested you, is that something you were aware of?
I know that that's my earliest memory.
Okay.
That I can remember. Is it happening?
Okay. Did you ever feel unsafe when you were that young?
You did. Constantly.
Constantly unsafe. Yeah. That's very young to be unsafe.
Yeah.
Feel unsafe.
Yeah, it is. I could remember like not knowing, because we ended up in the foster system eventually.
Oh, okay.
And not knowing like where my sisters were. Not knowing, you know, where I was going to be. Luckily, we ended up at my aunt's house as foster parents. But, like, it was still kind of touch and go, like, knowing whether I was going to be safe or not.
Yeah. So, did you move from Kansas to Omaha then?
Yeah.
Okay. How old were you when you moved to Omaha?
I don't remember. Okay. I just remember being there. So I don't remember the move itself, but it was pretty, probably 1990 or so.
Yeah. What prompted the move, do you know?
Not sure.
Yeah.
Probably the allegations, the molestation, abuse and stuff like that.
All right. So it was doing a geographical, as they say. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. And Kansas, same thing? What prompted the move to Kansas?
Not sure. I know my aunt took a job. She had gotten out of medical school, and she had taken a job as a nurse practitioner. And they kind of moved back to Kansas. And so I don't know why the family moved back, but it wasn't...
And when you say the family, you mean your mom and...
Grandma and grandpa
and grandparents.
My aunt.
And your aunt. Okay. Yeah. So that was basically your family unit.
Yeah.
Did you ever have a reliable father figure in your life?
No.
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 Do you ever feel a longing for a father? Or
I did growing up.
Yeah.
That was a big issue I had, was not having a dad. Like, knowing my life would have been different had I had a dad. Mm-hmm. It bothered me back then. But, like, now I'm just like, I'm okay not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. How long were you in foster care?
I don't know how long.
Yeah.
I was still pretty young.
How young?
Probably be 4 or 5.
Okay. And what was the best thing that happened in Kansas?
Kansas, I had a best friend named Cody Burton.
Yeah.
And, like, I got to go stay at his house a couple times. So, like, I could leave my mess of whatever it was and go and be a part of a normal family.
Yeah.
And that was pretty nice.
What prompted the move to Missouri? Was it the same sort of circumstance?
No. We got ran out of town.
Oh.
Basically. The pastor of the church at the time, like my aunt was having her 30th birthday, and the pastor of the church at the time was caught with my cousin, like sexual allegations and everything. And so the town decided to back the pastor and the church instead of who it happened to. So we got kind of forced out of town.
Oh, wow. That must have been humiliating.
Yeah. Needless to say, I don't do church much anymore. It's not the church that's at fault. It's people that are at fault. And that happens anywhere.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
And then high school.
Yes.
High school. And all that was written on the timeline was just high school.
Yeah.
And high school for most people is a fairly eventful time, you know, where things are either extremely troublesome or you're the prince or, you know, you're the jock. Or you're what was it like for you?
For me, it started out miserable because I was homeschooled. I was homeschooled all the way up until the last 2 years of my education.
Oh.
And the last 2 years, due to like me being a kid and being a prick as a kid and like telling my aunt that my aunt was a teacher at the time teaching us. And I told her that I wish, you know, that like I wrote it down in the school book knowing that she would see it, but I told her I wish I wasn't there and stuff like that. And so she got upset and eventually led me to go into a private school.
Okay.
My last 2 years. And those last 2 years were pretty, pretty awesome.
Yeah?
Yeah. Like, I got to leave my, again, environment where I was at was pretty miserable.
Yeah.
And go into an environment where I felt like I could be normal. Like, I would have a chance at being a normal kid.
Yeah. And then moved to New York.
Yeah, after high school, my sister had moved to New York State, it's a town called Cortland, and she had moved there to meet this guy or whatever, but I was just ready to get away from Missouri, uh-huh. away from the environment, away from everything that I decided I'd go and live with my sister for a little bit,
uh-huh.
and that was kind of a... It didn't last long. Like, the guy she was living with at the time, like, he wasn't the greatest of people.
Mm-hmm.
And so, when he tried to control, you know, like, oh, I'm a kid still, I need to have rules and stuff like this. And I'm like, I'm out of high school, I'm an adult now. Like, I'm going to be treated as such, or I'm going to leave. Mm-hmm. So I left.
You mentioned you came back more broken than before.
Yeah, I was pretty broken because, like, it didn't work out. You know, life had beat me back.
What were you? How were you making money at this time?
I was working as a manager at Wendy's.
Oh, okay. So you were still in the culinary arts.
Yeah, working my way up.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I moved back to Missouri, pretty broken, lost.
Yeah.
Didn't know where to go. And I should have been focusing on grounding myself and rebuilding myself. But instead, I went looking for relationships because, you know, that's the best thing to do, right?
After your return to Missouri,
mm-hmm.
you got married and had kids.
Yeah.
That entry in the timeline was short, but I have a feeling that experience was long.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, yeah it was. It was very humbling. to be a parent, I learned a lot of things not to do. You know, not have an example to go by, really, on what a dad should do. So I kind of, I don't know, I started raising my kids like my mom raised me. And then I realized what it was doing to my kids eventually. When my son walked away from a discussion we had, and he was saying, "I'm just so stupid." And I was like, I was like, I can't believe I made my son feel like that.
Mm-hmm. Was that a feeling you had had as a youth? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So when you see it, it's like, oh.
Yeah. It was really triggering. And so like from that day forward, I decided to be different, to do different, to do the opposite of what I was doing because it wasn't working, you know.
So you had three kids over this span of time.
Yeah.
And what were you doing job-wise?
Job-wise, I was working at Wendy's, and then I had decided to go to culinary school. So then we had moved on to Nashville to go to culinary school.
The decision to go to culinary school was a big one because it cost something. And
yeah, it cost $35,000.
Yeah, okay. Well, how you know, that's a lot of pennies to save.
Yeah, it is. I worked through it.
Yeah?
Yeah. So I was working and going to school. I had different scheduled classes, like at the end of the week. They were at night at the end of the week. So like they were midnight classes.
Yeah.
But it allowed me to go to school and, you know, work and everything. Yeah, and then I moved back to Missouri. We had, our car got stolen. Our apartment got broken into in Nashville and stuff like that. And so we just defeated again. Ended up back in Missouri.
Yeah.
We had nowhere else to go. Oh, you know, okay. We were like defeated.
Yeah. Now, this was a tough one. Infidelity. How did you discover it, and what was your reaction?
I discovered it by my kids mentioning that, you know, oh, well, mommy was sitting on his lap or stuff like that, and that really got me. It was hell. To witness and to go through that, because it was like, well, I had a bit of an addiction with computers and stuff like that. And I deal with addiction a lot in my life. And so like I had gotten rid of the computer, which was causing problems in my life, in my relationships and stuff like that. And so I had gotten rid of that and stuff like that. But I was putting all my effort into the relationship and it didn't matter because, you know, witnessing that, it's like, what was the point?
That was quite a shock. Did you make a fairly instantaneous decision about what to do, or did you mull it over, or have a lot of fights over it, or what?
I left right away.
Oh, okay.
I left, went to my mom's. I had nowhere else to go. And like a month later, I ended up in my own apartment or house, whatever. But like in that time of leaving, I tried to make like, because I had to make decisions about the kids. What are we going to do about the kids? What are we going to do about, you know, all this other stuff? And she never co-parented. She'd never been a part of co-parenting.
Now, so, were these kids homeschooled too? Or
no.
No, they went to public school.
No, they were going to public school. So they had that. I didn't want them homeschooled.
Yeah. You had a bad experience
with them. Yeah, I did. So pretty much just trying to fight for my rights to get what I could with the kids. And then like some bruises showed up on my daughter. And, so as a parent, if I don't report it, I'm negligent, you know? So I'm trying to do my due diligence. And at the end of the day, like it got used in court against me and stuff. And so like that was my lowest point in life.
You mentioned earlier in the discussion about self-harm and when you self-harm, how does it manifest itself?
Usually I just kind of like smack myself in the face or I'll hit my head against the wall on my own accord or stuff like that. Like,
yeah. Has any medication been able to help with that?
Kind of.
Yeah.
We're kind of getting in a good groove with prescriptions and stuff that does kind of help with that.
Oh, that's good. That's good. Yeah. I'm wondering, with the infidelity thing, if you went through the standard grief cycle, you know, it starts with denial, and there's anger, and there's bargaining, depression, and acceptance. Now, you're at the acceptance part, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I will say, I definitely could see myself in the five stages.
Yeah.
Looking back now, I can definitely see.
Yeah.
I was probably in anger a lot more than I should have been.
Well, anger, my definition of anger is hurt that has aged, you know, that you carry and it's aged and you haven't had the chance to express it. Like, mm-hmm. like you would express, you know, breast milk. You know, you can't get it out, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, see, I learned, like, in some situations, you're never going to get the chance to get it out.
Yeah.
And so you just got to let it go.
Yeah, that's hard to do.
Yeah.
Know, without expressing it. I mean, how do you let it go without expressing it? That's hard.
It's definitely hard to explain.
Yeah, yeah. You just let go. And it is.
Yeah, it's like a sad goodbye.
Yeah.
You know?
I want to know about the incident about drinking bleach.
Okay.
What was the circumstance? Is this what you were living in Missouri?
Mm-hmm.
And you were still married?
Yes, I was still married.
Okay. And what happened?
I'd woken up in the morning, and I had went into the bathroom, and I just kept thinking to myself, like, I can't do this anymore. Like, my life is a lie.
Yeah.
I don't want to do this anymore. And so, like, I went about my day a little bit and tried to do a breakfast routine, but I couldn't eat because I wasn't feeling like it.
Yeah.
And, so then I went back into the bathroom and just randomly found the bleach. And I was like, you know what? I was like, if I can't do it anymore, then I can just find a way out. And so I slowly opened up the bottle, tried to argue in my head, you know, don't do this. But yeah, and there really wasn't that loud of a voice saying, don't do this. It was more do it. And so I tipped it back for the first time, choked, spit it out. And then I took it back the second time and was like, no, I'm actually going to do this. And so I swallowed it the second time and the third and again.
Yeah. And what happened?
And just, I got sick from it. I ended up in the hospital.
Who found you?
She did. My ex did.
Okay.
Ended up in the hospital. I don't know how much I drank, you know. I was so out of it mentally. Like, I don't remember much of what happened other than, like, them having to do surgery and removing half of my stomach.
Mm.
I was probably in the hospital for about a month.
Was most of this therapy? Or
a lot of it was therapy, yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of it was me wondering, like, why my kids weren't enough for me to want to stay alive anymore.
Mm.
Or why I just didn't want to be alive.
You had a lot of people come into your life who weren't that good for you.
Right.
And so, you know, you can't blame yourself for that sort of thing. Then you moved to Washington?
Yeah, so I was long distance dating somebody. Silly me. And it just didn't work out. And I ended up back in the mental ward in the hospital. I drove up to Portland to meet a friend. I tried my best to stay out of the hospital. And then leaving my friend's house, I was like, I could either drive off a bridge or I could drive to the hospital. So I drove to the hospital and checked myself in. And I met my current future wife there.
Yeah.
Whose name is Sherry Jean. And she's the magic to my life, I think. And so we met there and lived in Camas, Washington for a while.
Okay. And you moved to Westport?
Yeah, I moved to Westport.
And you're settled now?
Yeah, we're finishing getting settled. Yeah. Our house is still packed with boxes, but yeah. It's going to be okay.
Yeah. Well, that's good.
Yeah.
That's good. How did you know that Sherry Jean was what you were looking for, what you needed?
We spend a lot of time together. Like, her love language is quality time. My love language is quality time and stuff like that. And so we spend a lot of time together. We don't really argue. We don't have disagreements. We don't have, you know, we have little tiffs here and there, but that's it. It's nothing like, 'cause we're two separate humans, you know?
Yeah.
But, it's not like, you know, when we do argue, I have safe space to have space. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's not like where in the past I didn't have a space to be upset about something. This time I do have that space. I do have that freedom. It's green flags instead of red flags.
Yeah, yeah. And there's a certain responsibility that comes with green flags. You know, it's like you have to fess up or just be honest.
Yeah, exactly. And so it's going to be okay.
Yeah. This, I don't know where in the timeline this comes, but you had an issue with your weight.
Yeah.
And I imagine that was a factor in the decisions you made or...
Yeah.
The way people treated you or...
So this happens way back from when I was young.
Uh-huh.
I've always had an issue with my weight. I've always been overweight. I've always been the big guy.
Mm.
You know, and so the most I ever weighed was over 600 pounds. And that's when I was the lowest point in my life. And so moving to New Mexico and having the surgery on my stomach and stuff like that did help. But moving to New Mexico, I walked everywhere I went. But I had ended up losing over 300 pounds.
Oh, wow.
It was probably in the course of like three years I lost it all.
Yeah. So you were heavy from what age, would you say?
From the time I was eight on. Yeah.
Until when your stomach was surgically changed.
Yeah.
Yeah. Since this is a show about fatherhood and contact with your children is sort of difficult.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you surmise that it will be until they are of age.
Yeah.
You know, until you see them.
Yeah.
What do you want to say to them? You know, what do you want to impart to them? Or, you know, just how do you feel about them, first of all?
I feel that... You know, of course I love him. You know, I do feel right now that they're better off until I get more stable without me. But I do miss him. I do miss him terribly.
Yeah.
I keep seeing photos pop up in my history timeline and stuff, and I miss him a lot, man.
And your youngest is what, 10?
Yeah, she'll turn 10.
Yeah.
In August.
Okay. And so say another 10 years, she'll be 20. You should be ready by then.
Yeah.
At least to make some overtures, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think I'm working on myself. They know I'm working on my mental health. They know, you know, it's not that they don't know,
Yeah. You
know, because I wanted to be open with them. Guys, right. I want to be honest with you. I can't be there for you right now. As much as I want to be, as much as it hurts, I can't be. But I'm working on it to where I can be, Yeah. You know. And so I think they know that.
Well, hopefully you'll see them again sooner than later.
Yeah, sooner than later.
Yeah, and a lot of what you've gone through goes, you know, other men go through, and you have a sense of belonging now that wasn't there.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And I feel like a lot of the times guys don't voice or don't get to or don't want to voice what they go through. Yeah. And so, like, they just go on about their day quietly and no one knows that they're struggling. And it's not okay, you know.
Just to be a struggling parent and to have to manage the well-being of children is really hard sometimes.
Just. Yeah, yeah. Especially when you're not emotionally mature enough to keep your emotions in check. And so, like, it's easy to lash out. It's easy to, especially kids, because they're just there to take the brunt of it.
Yeah.
You know, and so it's really tough to be a parent, especially when you're fighting against all that.
All right, Jeff. Well, thanks for being on the show.
Yep. Thank you. I had a great time.
The courage to discuss mental health. Jeff has so ably demonstrated that by putting his voice out there to prove that therapy and commitment can be vital to survival. I admire his honesty and have tremendous gratitude for his willingness to come forward and talk about the storms of his life. With so much turmoil, it's remarkable and proof of human resilience that he can transform it into a healthy story. What should a child expect from a parent? Safety, love, presence? Sometimes presence is impossible for reasons outside of anyone's control, particularly when mental health is a challenge and a priority. A sick parent is not good for a child. And even though blood, sweat, and tears get spent, they may not be helpful without outside assistance. Sometimes the way we see life lacks clarity. The lens can be distorted. The big picture changes and loses its definition depending on what we're going through. That may be when it's time for help. Asking for help is no shame. Maybe one of the best pieces of advice in the world is to ask for what you need. If you're having thoughts of suicide, call or text 988 to reach the 988 Suicide and Crisis Lifeline, or go to speakingofsuicide.com/resources for a list of additional resources. And on that note, I will say thanks once again to Jeff for being forthcoming, generous, and gracious, and thank you to Jason Shaw of Autonautics for the music on this show. If you'd like to get in touch, shoot me an email at radioranchero@gmail.com. I thank you for listening to this episode of Father Figures, and remember, the days may be long, but the years are short. Bye-bye.